Hello, VetBlast podcast listeners. Did you know that you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. What do you know about osteoarthritis in cats and diagnosis and treatment options? We want to thank our friends from Zoetis for sponsoring this great podcast. And we have the one and only Dr. Sheila Robertson joining us. How are you, my friend?
I'm really good. Actually, I've got a cat sitting right next to me as I'm talking to you. One of my cats.
Well, it doesn't get any cat-tastic-er than that. Well, so glad. Thank you for joining us. And after a little bit of information about a friend here, after graduating from the University of Glasgow, Dr. Robertson undertook specialized training in anesthesia, pain management, and animal welfare. She is board certified in anesthesia and in animal welfare by the respective American and European colleges and holds a certificate in small animal acupuncture and shelter medicine. Her career has included time in mixed animal practice, academia, and in the welfare division of the American Veterinary Medical Association. She's worked in the UK, Canada, and the U.S. She is the Senior Medical Director of Lap of Love Veterinary Hospice, a large network of veterinarians dedicated to end-of-life care. Dr. Robertson is also courtesy professor in the Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences at the University of Florida in Gainesville, Florida. Okay, well, we got a lot to unpack here about cats because we know that, you know, osteoarthritis or degenerative joint disease is the most common cause of chronic or maladaptive pain in cats, but is under-recognized by owners, and therefore many cats go untreated, Dr. Robinson. So why is it so hard?
Well, cats don't usually go out for a walk with their owner, so they have a completely different lifestyle compared to dogs, right? Where someone will notice a dog is limping or doesn't want to walk as far. Cats, you know, they kind of do their own thing and they sleep a lot. They're in the home. And there's a huge misconception that, you know, cats will slow down because they're aging. And people often don't think they're slowing down or not doing all the silly things they used to do when they were young because they're getting old. And a lot of, it doesn't cross a lot of people's minds that this change in behavior could be because they're getting painful. Like the mischievous cat that people used to always laugh about that was up on climbing on cabinets and knocking stuff off is no longer doing that. And most of the time it's because they can't get up there anymore. And it's because they're painful and the underlying problem is osteoarthritis because it is incredibly common in cats as we've learned over the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I've read something that up to 92% of all cats have radiographic changes or radiographic disease in the axial and appendicular skeleton. And those changes are more common in cats over the age of 10. Is that right?
Yeah. So over the age of six, like 60% of cats, if you take a radiograph, you're going to see some changes. And when they get to over 12, it's going to be like 90%. Now, that's what you'll see on radiographs. And then when you clinically look at what we're interested in is clinical osteoarthritis. So do they have pain and do they have mobility impairment? So about half of those cats, like 45% or more, will have clinical osteoarthritis. And the thing that can make it a little bit complex for us trying to diagnose it is that you could do a clinical exam on a cat and it reacts to you bending or flexing, say, its elbow. Then you take a radiograph and it doesn't look that bad, but vice versa also. So what you find clinically doesn't always match up with the radiographs, and what you see in radiographs doesn't always match up with what you find on the cat. Yeah. But an awful lot of joint pain is going unrecognized and unfortunately untreated in cats.
Wow. Yeah, sounds like it. And okay, so we talked about radiographs, and we know that there are some screening and assessment tools that have been developed and validated for cats that can help us, you know, kind of diagnose the disease and monitor response to treatment. So what would be a recommended tool for evaluating osteoarthritis in cats?
Okay, so the really good news is there's a really simple, we call it a checklist. And it's actually been validated, and it was in a peer-reviewed paper. The primary author was Enomoto. So it's a checklist to detect degenerative joint disease or OA in cats, and it's six very simple questions. So does your cat jump up normally? Does it jump down normally? Can it climb up stairs or steps normally? Can it climb down stairs or steps? Can it run normally? And does it like to chase moving objects? You know, like if you interact with it with play. So basically there's six questions that you ask the owners or have it on a send out questionnaire before the appointment or in the, as they're waiting to see you. And it's a yes or no, right? And if they can't do these activities, they check no, then that's a red flag. And that red flags you to look closer at that cat, because it's a very specific questionnaire, which is good because you're not going to get a lot of false positives. And you may need to kind of help the owner a little bit saying, well, you might want to compare how your cat does these activities now compared to when he or she was maybe 2 years old. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's different. It's really changed.
Well, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on the feline musculoskeletal pain index.
Yeah, so that's another one that's been very, very well put together and is available for us to use. And it's like a Likert-type questionnaire for owners. And it's luckily now, because we're all busy, everyone's busy, it's just been validated in a much shorter version. So there's a lot fewer questions, and the owners just fill in the dot. You know, it's pretty easy. And again, mostly it's about questions about their ability to jump up and jump down. And that's another screening tool. And then obviously we can use that tool as an outcome measure, because if we are going to treat these cats, we need to have a baseline. What did they score with, if we're using the feline musculoskeletal index? And there's other ways we can ask owners. And then we intervene, and then we can redo those questionnaires, and their numbers should improve, right? So we need an outcome measure. And one of the things I often will ask owners to do is we call it a CSOM. So it's a client-specific outcome measure. So what you do is you discuss with the owner specific things that the cat can or can't do. Like, can it get up on its cat tree? Can it get up on the couch? And then you choose one activity, or maybe more than one activity, and that's what they're going to monitor, like that the cat can do that better after you've intervened. Like, it can jump up on the couch easily. It doesn't clamber up and, you know, claw its way up. It can just jump up. So those are good tools. And then the thing that is so helpful in cats is home videos. Because, yes. Well, you know, when you're in practice, cat comes in for an exam, right? Is it going to just come out of the carrier and jump off the table and walk around and show you, look how I walk, look how I jump? No, it's just going to sit there, you know, like, don't touch me. So having home videos, and you need like 20 seconds of video. Just ask the owner, just videotape your cat walking across in front of you. Trying to get up on a chair, getting up on a table, getting down, just basic activities. And then when we look at them, it can be really clear. Like, some cats will slide off a bed, right? Because they don't want to jump off it because it hurts if they have bad elbows. So they'll just slide down. And unless you see that video, you wouldn't have learned that about the cat. So home videos, 20, 30 second clip, invaluable.
So invaluable. Love videos in general for all pet parents. I think that's great. Thank you so much. All right. Well, let's pivot a little bit and let's talk about pain related to osteoarthritis. And we know that in cats, it can be responsive to, say, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and Solensia. So walk us through a little bit about what we know about pain relationships and osteoarthritis.
So we know that it's a very common disease in cats. And currently, we have to be very truthful with clients, because when we need to set expectations and goals of care, it's not a disease that we can currently cure, right? So, but we can manage it very well. We can improve their comfort. We can get them back to jumping up and, you know, knocking things off counters again, if that's what you're looking for. But so we can't cure this disease, but we can control the pain that's related to the disease. And there are several different ways of doing that. And we always want to look at the best evidence that we have for what is efficacious. And in 2022, the American Animal Hospital Association published acute and chronic pain management guidelines. And I love the way they did it, because they put their treatment protocols into tiers, tier one, two, and three. And tier one is where there's most evidence base. And for cats with osteoarthritic pain, in the top tier, tier one treatments are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and anti-nerve growth factor monoclonal antibodies, which we know as Solensia. So they're top tier with good evidence that they are efficacious for controlling the pain in their joints. And the other thing is, this is chronic pain, or better put, maladaptive pain, because they're painful in the joints. And that's the other thing with cats. There are often multiple joints affected by this disease, not just one, but multiple, you know, and their, you know, axial and appendicular skeleton. And so they have peripheral sensitization, but that chronic pain and that information that's being, you know, sent to the spinal cord has caused wind up, what we often call wind up pain or central sensitization as well. So it really is maladaptive pain, because it's of no value to the cat, but it causes a lot of poor quality of life, but it serves no function, no value to the cat. It's maladaptive pain.
Okay. So what is Solensia?
So Solensia is a lot of people probably listening in are probably using it already in cats. So at first it was launched in Europe and other countries, and it's now available here. And we've got quite a lot of experience with it now. And it is a anti-nerve growth factor monoclonal antibody. And its real name is frunivetmab, but Solensia is a lot easier to say. So that's what we'll call it. Yes. And so it's a single injection that goes under the skin, and it only needs to be given once a month. And the FDA approved it for the control of pain associated with osteoarthritis in cats.
Okay, so we have Solensia, which is really what we're saying to my colleagues and my network, at least, is that it's a game changer. It's doing such great improvement. But I want to kind of talk about other options that are out there, or maybe misconceptions. Pregabalin, gabapentin. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so certainly gabapentin and probably pregabalin, but probably mostly gabapentin is widely used. It's a highly prescribed drug in veterinary medicine for dogs and cats. I would probably say over prescribed. It's not an effective analgesic, certainly not for acute pain. Now, the way it might work in chronic pain is very, very complex. And obviously, there's no approved gabapentin products for cats. So we're, you know, using a human product and an off-label. So a lot of people have been using gabapentin. And, you know, we've got one published study, and it was like, I think, 20 cats, and none of the cats in that study had chronic kidney disease, because that really complicates the picture when you talk about gabapentin. And there were problems with the owners being able to medicate the cats, and the side effects were the cats were pretty sleepy and the cats were ataxic. Now, because we all use, or most of us are probably using gabapentin to make a cat sedate to come to see you, right? So long term, they may adapt to that. So it's not a top tier. It's not in the top tier evidence, you know, list for osteoarthritis pain in cats. But we've been using what we have available to try and help these cats. But one of the things that gabapentin might have been might do is help with anxiety, because when an animal or a person has long-term pain, then they become, you know, anxious or depressed, and then that exacerbates the pain. So, you know, helping with controlling stress and anxiety, it may have an indirect effect. But that's the other thing is when you're looking at OA treatment in cats, you've got to look very holistically, like what's going on in the house, right? Does that cat have a safe place that it can get to with its mobility impairment? Is there, you know, inter-cat or aggression that raises the stress level and makes pain worse? So it's a very holistic approach. And then the issue we have in the US is, although non-steroidals are efficacious for OA pain, we don't have one that is approved for long-term use. I mean, robenacoxib and meloxicam are approved for long-term use in other countries, but that is not the way it is in the United States.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it makes our arsenal a little bit more limited. And
yeah, and then just mentioning the gabapentin, if you think about the age of most of these cats that you're seeing, they often have comorbidities. I always think cats like to collect comorbidities, you know, like more than one. Sometimes two, sometimes three. Yes. So a lot of these older cats have chronic kidney disease. And gabapentin is entirely dependent on renal excretion. So we do have data. Jessica Quimby published some lovely data showing that cats with chronic kidney disease, the pharmacokinetics of gabapentin are completely different. So we would have to do dose adjustments, you know, based on their kidney disease. So it's not simple. And then even in people that take gabapentin, you know, they start on a specific dose, but when they get to a point where it's working, you know, you can look at the data and people are on, you know, widely, you know, different doses. So it's very difficult to titrate that drug in a cat to an endpoint, especially if they have kidney disease.
Yeah. And speaking of comorbidities and even co-administration, what about Solensia? How does that work if we have our cats that have comorbidities or if they're also receiving other medications and we want to prescribe Solensia?
That's a really good question because, you know, in the real world, these cats are usually, you know, older in the older population. They got more than one thing wrong with them. So in the studies that were done to get a FDA approval, and we know how tough that is for Solensia. So cats that had chronic kidney disease that had been staged iris stage one or two did participate in the studies. So we do know that cats with iris stage one and two kidney disease have received Solensia, and the studies didn't show any issues. But above stage two, like so the cats with stage three and four, that has not been studied. And then, you know, often these cats are perhaps being helped by a non-steroidal, and then we can offer or the owner chooses to try Solensia. So usually what happens is that you can keep them on their current non-steroidal, which of course in the US is off-label long-term, and then start the Solensia. And then usually what you'll see is like, or the owner will report, you know, a bigger improvement, and then you can start to wean them off their non-steroidals. But the key is you've got to have an outcome measure so that the owner, you know, is maintaining that comfort and maybe getting better. And the other thing is everyone has to remember Solensia, and we need to be sure the owners know this because they see us giving an injection, and usually they think an injection works right away, right? So we got to tell them that we give this injection, can take a few, some cats will respond within a few days, some a few weeks, some you won't really see that dramatic improvement or improvement until they're into their second round, that second dose. So it's once a month, And certainly you'd want to at least give them two injections and be monitoring or videotaping something every few days or weeks to see if you're getting a response.
That's what I love about the power of video, what we talked earlier about, because you take video beforehand, before they see you, then you go ahead, and a month later, you have them videotape the Solentia, and you'll see subtle improvements. And I think it's great to have that discussion in the exam room. We can look at gait or how they're going into the litter box or all those things. So I think that's really crucial.
Yep. Yeah. And the other thing is, I think, you know, a lot of animals that have pain present with what the owner thinks is a behavior problem. Like they don't want to be petted. They don't want to be touched. They've become reclusive or aggressive, or they're not using their litter box. In so many of those cases, the underpinning reason is the cat is in pain. And once we address the pain, what the owner thought was a behavioral issue will go away.
And any side effects with Solentia?
Hopefully everybody that uses it looks at all the information on the Zoetis website and obviously the prescribing information. There are obviously, when you do trials to be for approval, there's control group and then there's the Solentia group. And, you know, as always, you get things reported in both groups because cats are cats, right? And, you know, they could be in the placebo group, but vomit and it's going to be recorded. So yeah, the one thing that people are talking about is that some cats will start to like scratch a little bit, not at where you gave the injection, but around their ears, maybe around their neck, between their shoulder blades, kind of itchy and scratchy. So that's been reported. And there is a new paper just came out describing like 4 or 5 cases in cats that had reactions like that and actually caused some skin lesions. And most of those cats, they did actually stop the Solentia treatment. But you will see some cats itch and nothing, you know, is nothing but a little itch, but it is rare. But what I want to tell people is that, you know, if you see something that you think is a side effect of you having treated the cat, it doesn't matter what drug, but if we're talking about Solentia, is report it, right? Report it. You know, we can report it to the Zoetis. We can report it to the FDA, because the more we learn about these cases, the more we can figure out what's going on. And if we don't hear about it, pharmacovigilance doesn't work, right? That's what, you know, pharmacovigilance is all about. What's happening now that this product is out in the real world, right? Huge population of cats with different problems. So report it. And, you know, maybe there's some common factor that ties these cases together. And then we would know who to not give it to. Yeah.
Yeah. That's excellent. And I also got to mention, I love the checklist that's out there too, the catoachecklist.com. I think that's fantastic. I think it's a good discussion to have with our fellow cat parents out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You can just send a link, right? Yeah. Just send a link to your cat owners.
Easy.
Yeah. It's easy, right? Here, it's already been done for you. Send the link, tell them to go and look. Do you recognize your cat? Answer some questions. And there's a lot at that website. There's lots of little cartoons and stuff. And owners really, really, they get an aha moment. They're like,
yes,
that's right. Yeah. My cat, he doesn't jump right off the table. He now goes from the table to the chair to and then they were like, oh yeah, no, that's different. Yep.
Right. Absolutely. And when I talk to cat parents about Solentia, it's so much easier to say the word Solentia than frunivimab injection.
I'm with you on that one.
I love it. Dr. Robertson, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you to our friends at Zoetis for sponsoring this podcast.
Solentia frunivimab injection is indicated for the control of pain associated with osteoarthritis in cats. Important safety information. For use in cats only, women who are pregnant, try to conceive, or breastfeeding should take extreme care to avoid self-injection. Hypersensitivity reactions, including anaphylaxis, could potentially occur with self-injection. Solentia should not be used in breeding cats or in pregnant or lactating queens. Solentia should not be administered to cats with known hypersensitivity to frunivimab. The most common adverse effects reported in a clinical study were vomiting and injection site pain. See full prescribing information at silenciapi.com.
Thank you so much again for tuning into the podcast. Don't forget to rate this wonderful episode, and we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.